Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side. I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Michael Dwyer. Today is Sunday, the 22nd of the 9th, and here are the stories we'll be covering today. Justin Trudeau, the favourite person of our Taoiseach, has come out with a tendency towards fashion choices that have been deemed archaic and deeply offensive. We'll talk more on that.
Not just the Taoiseach's favourite person, a lot of people's favourite person. Anyway.
The Children's Crusade, the strike, took place there a couple of days ago. We'll have a chat about that. But also, we want to talk about the demands that a global strike, which are the people who organise the global strike against climate change, and theoretically, therefore, the people who everyone who stroke are in favour of, striked are in favour of. We want to look at some of the demands they've put forward and see if they make sense, or if they're just meaningless corporate gibberish. We also want to talk about an article that Patricia Casey, a consultant psychiatrist at the Mater Hospital, wrote. She also does a cooking podcast on Gripped, which you should check out if you want to learn how to make ice cream.
She's also a professor of psychiatry in UCD.
Patricia has many strings to her belt. But she wrote an article on eco-anxiety. Something I've been thinking of recently, particularly in relation to how people are reported to have been during the height of the Cold War, when nuclear annihilation was an actual possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to close with a Sunday Times poll. So, Justin Trudeau, he of the fabulous socks, Leo's
bestie,
in many ways. Leo seems to have modelled himself after the great success of Justin Trudeau.
Mm-hmm.
Well, international success, because nationally it's just been scandal after scandal after scandal.
Do you think Trudeau actually looks a little bit like Christian Bale in American Psycho?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. So if you've missed it, photos came out recently which showed Justin Trudeau in what was described as brown face.
Yes.
Not blackface, brown face.
There's the difference between when all of the electricity goes out, that's a blackout. When they just lower the amount of electricity available, they call that a brownout.
So, well, he certainly looks like he's covered himself in shoe polish.
Shoe polish? Really?
And it's kind of, I wouldn't have put it as brown, more shoe polish black.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, I admire his commitment to the bit, because when you see the photos, it's down his neck, it's on his hands, it's on his wrists, it's running up his arms.
As we like to say in the artistic community, he has committed to it.
Yes, he is committed to the role.
Yes.
So, photos came out of him in brown face, and he had to call a press conference, and he had to apologise. And at that conference, he said he had also made a terrible mistake and blacked up a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe there are photos of that.
Mm.
But you know, that was it. That was just the two times, which is two more than most people do, but still, just the two. And within hours, the newspapers had found a third photo of him at a third event, also in blackface. And this one is apparently at some sort of remote camp on the edge of the wilderness, which means that Justin Trudeau so loves getting into blackface that he carried one to the edge of civilization with him, a kit to black up. And now, when reporters are going, Mr. Trudeau, can you tell us how many times you actually went into blackface? He's simply refusing to answer the question, which would indicate the answer ranges from more than three to rather a lot.
I think rather a lot somehow is indicative. Maybe not. It's perfectly possible and reasonable. Let's be reasonable. That you've forgotten that third occasion. But although I've never done it in my life, so I think if I had, I would remember. It can be a very pleasant experience putting shoe polish on yourself.
No, I mean, it seems deeply uncomfortable. But apparently Mr. Trudeau is unable to work out how many times he's gotten into blackface. Which strikes me as more likely than not being Mr. Trudeau saying he can't remember how many times he's been photographed in blackface.
I don't know. Why is brownface less offensive? Because it was definitely, that was the sense that when he said, you know, it was brown face, and everybody agreed it was brown face, that it wasn't black. It isn't, frankly. I've known guys who are black or who were lighter shade of brown than Mr. Trudeau was in this particular photograph. I don't get that. What is
I think because it works on an American style sensibility. Where people say, well, blackface has the cultural baggage of the minstrel shows, and we're all expected to go, ah, yes, American culture.
Yeah, the minstrel shows, yeah, we had it.
And therefore it's worse, and the fact that certain European countries have cultural traditions that basically involve dressing in blackface at festivals annoys people to no end.
Just as a drive-by shooting, I'll throw a finger at you here and move on. I was reading an article over the weekend which just stated the flat fact that 25% of the UK economy historically had been based on was based on wealth from slavery.
I'd like to see how they define wealth from slavery.
I tell you, they're going to have to define it very, very widely indeed, because lots of people have done studies on that, and the figure is nowhere near. The UK got rich by having ideas, good ideas mostly. That's how people get rich. Well, yeah, Navy, but but that's the point. The Navy, they all talk about colonialism and slavery, and Britain was in the business of empire and slavery and colonialism, which in fact a lot of the time early on the Brits really weren't that bothered about having an empire. They wanted trading posts. They wanted to trade. They insisted with the local rulers that they were bloody well going to trade. But the idea is they wanted to have some massive land empire sometime in 1750, when really what they wanted was to buy and sell shit in India. It just isn't true. They didn't care. They just wanted money.
No, and when Britain decided it wanted to kill off slavery, it did it fairly effectively.
Oh, yeah. Pretty quickly.
Considering slavery has been a function of human society, pretty much all of human society, British did more than nearly anyone else I can think of to end it as a global thing. Now, it's still slavery, but, I mean, comparatively.
There's slavery where there has always been slavery, which is in the Islamic North Africa and in the Gulf. The Muslim traders who maintained the trade all through the 18th, 19th century. One of the other points that they were making, which is, we'll move on from just, as I say, drive-by shooting, it was that we have to get rid of this nonsense notion that in some way there was a moral imperative or there was a moral aspect to Britain's deciding to get rid of slavery, which is all very well and revisionist and fun and self-flagellating. It's simply not true. If you read any of the accounts, there were certain people who maybe abandoned slavery for practical reasons. Smith certainly believed that a free economy with free people and a market would be a superior economy to a slave economy or to a plantation economy. Although the growth of King Cotton in the second half of the 19th century suggests that it is perfectly possible for a slave economy to compete with a free economy. The fact is, you look at the accounts, the contemporary accounts, there are a hell of a lot of those people involved in the abolition process in Britain who did so far simply for conscience issues. Quakers, Methodists, you know.
I just love the idea of the Quakers. Whatever they say, but deep down they were like, well, this is just an archaic economic system. We've got to get rid of it.
Yeah, they're at their meetings and they decided we won't read the Bible. We'll read Adam Smith's, you know, the Treaties of the Wealth of Nations, and say, well, you know, we should be against slavery. We should make chocolate and be against slavery.
I mean, it'll drive GDP through the roof.
Absolutely. Although we won't talk about how we get the chocolate, because there may be slaves involved in picking the cocoa beans.
So, did you ever go to a party where someone blacked up, Michael?
I have been at parties where people have blacked up. I've been on stage where people were blacked up.
Well, that's stagecraft.
Stagecraft? There was very little fucking stagecraft about this, Gary, I can assure you. Yeah. I'm saying I have automatically, but I'm trying to. Halloween? I would have seen mummers around Stevens's Day who had Ren boys out of black would wear a black face.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I presume I've been at a party where someone went to, but just never the same person over and over again.
No, that would be. It's like the guy.
It's really weird.
It's like the guy who always turns up in the Nazi uniform. After a while, you start, You know, you might fascist, maybe phalange or something after a while. A change. If you like a uniform, you know, a different uniform. Maybe Soviet Marshal or something, but no.
Or Franco, you know, if you want to stay in the same ballpark and play a different game.
Franco, Salazar, Mussolini, something. Allende.
Nah, not Mussolini.
No, not poor old Benito. His stomach was an awful crucifixion to him. Anyway.
Which really helped when he was hung from that lamppost.
Yeah. Well, at least he was dead. Already, I mean, he was dead before they home.
The second time.
Yeah, exactly. Comes out from Cara Patachi. So, anyway, that's poor old Justin getting...
Yeah, so Justin is engaging in an odd bit of blackface. And he's now facing into the same sort of trouble that religious leaders suffer from when it turns out they enjoy the company of male prostitutes. It's just a little bit of, even if we didn't think it was a big deal to start with, and it probably isn't, you did invest an awful lot of time in telling people how they should behave.
If you hadn't been banging on about it quite so much, and been also... And this is something which is an absolutely inevitable concomitant of this kind of attitude. So if he hadn't been so fucking moral and piocious about it. Do you remember the perfectly nice girl who made the comment to the teenager about something, and she said, use the word mankind?
Oh, and he said womankind? I am not sure if he was joking about that, so I give him some...
I have watched this... If he was joking, it was a really bad joke because the poor girl was covered in confusion and embarrassment. And he didn't jump in and say, oh, no, you're all right, I was only joking, oh, you know. No, he didn't. He stuck with the bit. Anyway, moving on.
Yes, the Children's Crusade, the global strike. Do you want to take the wheel on this one?
Well, I'll take the wheel briefly and hand it back to you because you've got some very good stuff there that I do want. I'm eager that the people should hear. We are back again with the children taking a day off school. Am I being mean spirited when? Well, the first thing that I think is I want this to happen on a day which is a school holiday, and then see how many turn out. But
second, I mean, that would be fun.
I think we had pretty well established over the last 20 to 30,000 years of human civilization that young people, our children, are stupid and they don't know anything. So why...
Well, someone should tell RTE.
Yeah, RTE, we're having a little bit of a wet moment about this. A little bit of a wet dream.
Well, they came out and did this sort of... Yeah, this is an incredibly important issue. We're going to have an entire month of programming talking about how important this is and how great the children are and all that nonsense.
Did you see the ad where they have all these children looking into the camera and the last one says, they'll never listen to us unless we make them? I found that deeply uncomfortable because, first of all, I don't like the fact that they're using a they. They will never listen to us. Who is they? You could say it's the government or people in power. It seemed to me that far more likely reading of that text is they were adults. And I deeply dislike this positionality of putting children against adults. I think that's a wrong thing.
Now, I mean, yeah, it's the wrong thing. But on the other hand, I'm pretty sure I could take quite a number of children before I tire out.
I'm sure you could. I would hope that you'd be able to use your resources, maybe lay your hands on a semi-automatic weapon.
I mean, I'm sure eventually they'd take me down, but I feel...
I don't know, Gary, if you have enough semi-automatic weapons and the manual capacity to use them, you might be able to, you know, you'd be surprised.
That sort of remind me of the people...
The bodies tied up in front of you.
talking about the Area 51 raid and how the US military couldn't stop them all. I feel the US military has a capacity to stop a great deal of number, or a great number of people quite easily.
Oh, yeah. So they're marching for, I suspect they have no clue, genuinely have no clue what they're marching for, but they know. They've been told. Okay, let's just throw one number out there, and then I think we go into some of the more interesting parts. That it's all over by 2030.
Yeah, but it became 2030. That was 2025. That was 2020. No, I don't think anyone has gone to 2020 yet. That would be the act of a pessimist.
Indeed,
it also would be the worst kind of demand.
Well, it's a demand that can be dismissed through evidence
I think religious and apocalyptic cults have realized that a 15 to 25 year window is the perfect length.
I think it's 25. It gives you the time to forget the last time and get built up to the problem. Is obviously 2030 is going to come and go, and the apocalypse won't have happened. Now, I suppose I should probably take a breath and not be quite so exercised by this, because these kids will grow up. Now, in the intervening time, they will go to university, and they will be even bigger pains in university, those that don't discover alcohol and sex, at least. They will be horrendous. And then sometime they'll become adults, and they'll think, oh, well, actually, I kind of want to drive a car, and I want to go on holidays, and I want to heat the house, and I want to have kids, and I want to do all sorts of things that are not really on board with the whole project. Enough of these people get absolutely committed, become political and politicized, and they become the next cadre of Irish politicians, and they implement some of what the stuff that they're actually advocating for. We are back in the cave, Gary, and there's no two ways about it. And they can talk all they like about sustainability and balance. You sent me over a link there to people's demands. What are some of your favourites?
Well, I mean, firstly, just on the cave comment, I think we learned from Plato that man can very much enjoy living in a cave.
He can, but
that is a joke for exactly no one.
He can live in a cave, but I would say that very much the case that they're also living in a world where their knowledge is second-hand at best. These children are in caves, deep in caves already, because they're living on the shadows of information, not the information itself. There's another Platonic joke, whenever you wanted one. Okay.
There we go. Okay, so yeah, so the global strike is organized by a very particular set of people, and they have demands, which apparently the people who are marching for are marching in support of. But you can go on to their website and have a look at what those demands actually are.
Now, some of them are, I suppose, absolutely obvious, I suppose. Although, you know what? Reading through them, most of them kind of... Like, for example, number 3, okay? Starting not at number 1. Reject carbon capture and storage and bioenergy with carbon capture and storage projects and other techno fixes. Why? And I'm asking you that question, that you might have some insight into this. You may have read another article about this. It's not a rhetorical question. I'm genuinely curious. If the problem is carbon, and we seem to be agreed that it is principally carbon, and we can work out a technology which reduces carbon, gets carbon out of the atmosphere, and we can store it, either with something like putting that carbon into stone and burying it, or else by planting lots and lots of trees and creating carbon capture in forests. Why is that a bad thing?
Because it involves markets, corporations, and technology. Something with this, this document is not fond of. Also, it says that we should have 100% renewables only by 2030. That will not happen.
I mean, no, You said that will not happen. I accept that as a bold statement is true. I think I want you to amplify about how much that will not happen.
Well, let me put it this way. Britain currently aims to have a carbon neutral economy by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that would cost about £1 trillion to achieve.
Yeah.
By 2050. They want to bring that forward 20 years. I did look to see could I find any cost projections as to what that would actually cost. And they don't exist because no one takes it as a serious option. Because it's simply just fiscally not possible.
Just reflect on that for a second, though. In the United Kingdom is going to go carbon neutral by 2050. And that's going to cost them £1 trillion.
That's their estimate.
Their estimate. £1 trillion. I think people need to reflect on the amounts of money we're talking about. And that money is going to have to be found. Anybody who thinks this can be achieved without significant and very significant, number one, increases in personal taxation, indirect taxation on consumption taxes, but also on reductions in services. When the figures are getting up around £1 trillion in one country, you're looking at very significant reductions in services and wider quality of life issues. And it can't happen without that.
So I'm just going to start at the top here. I think the important thing about this document is that it is not about climate change as such. It is about what they would term climate justice. And it is largely about political. You know the way you'll hear people on the right occasionally say that climate change, generally on the right, although sometimes on the kind of more materialist left, they'll say things like climate change is just an excuse for these people to achieve a political goal. And you'll say, no, there's lots of people who believe in this who are actually concerned about the issue. And then you read a document like this and you're like, this is just a political goal.
You see, I know what you mean, because it will demand absolutely incredible levels of transfers of freedom and choice from people to basically an authoritarian centrally planned state. But do you not think that ultimately it's actually a religious document?
It pretty much is.
The only reason I can think that you could say reject carbon capture and bioenergy is this. And it says other techno fixes.
Well, there's different parts of the green movement.
Well, this
comes from a very particular strain of the green movement. And as soon as I started to read it, I have read this document before with different names and different layouts.
And even the same music, but different claims and different demands. But what they're actually attacking isn't in reality so much climate change, because if you presented them with a technology which would mitigate from the sources of anthropogenic climate change and at the same time allow us to continue with our lifestyle, they would reject. This is really an attack on our lifestyle and the way we live in the West.
Well, it's an attack on cheap energy, and the problem they have there is that cheap energy has been the driver of most of the reductions of global poverty we've seen over the last 20 years, and most of the increases in living standards. So I would fairly happily describe it as an anti-human document. But let's just go through it. So, they want a total moratorium on geoengineering. They say that's established by the Convention on Biological Diversity. The Convention on Biological Diversity, I had a look at it. It does ban a moratorium on certain aspects of it, but not all. Whereas they have just not lied, but not particularly put this, as it were...
Not very true.
No. And then reject carbon capture and storage, bioenergy, stop the conversion of local agricultural lands to non-food production purposes, internationally traded mitigation outcomes, carbon trading schemes, because they undermine human and indigenous rights, including indigenous culture, territorial sovereignty and integrity. They want people to stop burning biomass and reject the substitution of biofuels as an alternative to fossil fuels, and reject corporate-funded schemes promoting climate-smart agriculture.
Corporate, which is corporate to say, is the terrible, yeah. terrible word there, of course.
So, which is to say, reject anything that could reduce demand or impact without changing fundamentally human behaviours. And then it says to advance real solutions that are just, feasible and essential. So they want to move energy systems away from corporate-controlled fossil fuels and other harmful sources such as nuclear, mega-hydro and biofuels to a clean, safe system that empowers people and community. No, doesn't say what that system is. I run a very general line on the environmentalist movement. I will, anytime I meet someone who's involved with it, my first question is always about nuclear. And if they say they support it or they're open to it, I assume they're a serious person to some degree. And if they say they're against it, I assume they're just another nutter.
Okay.
And I have found that fairly effective, actually.
Well, if your personal problem is greenhouse gas and the generation of energy, then right now you don't have a choice. If you get rid of the car, if you get rid of fossil fuels, you have no other choice. There is nothing else on the block.
I think if you are an environmentalist and you are against nuclear, what you are saying is climate change is an existential threat to human life on the planet, but we don't want nuclear because it's icky.
Well, okay.
And I don't think that's a serious... I think the environmentalist movement and what they have done to the image of nuclear power have, if we are talking about anthropogenic climate change, probably one of the largest drivers to that has been the demonization of nuclear by the Green Movement, because had that not happened, there would have been much wider adoption.
Yeah.
So... And that does actually kind of deeply amuse me, if the thing that just kills us all is the environmentalist movement against
nuclear. Well, the important thing is we all die laughing.
Yeah, well, I will at least, anyway.
Just before we leave this, there's another aspect of this which is worth just commenting briefly on, maybe. Patricia Casey, Patricia Casey, UCD, a psychiatrist, has an article in the Indo about... this, where she says, we must not leave children traumatized by this eco-anxiety. Now, I grew up under the shadow of the bomb. Now, the one thing about the bomb is there was no debate about the bomb. I mean, we all knew that if, unlike climate change, that there was 100% agreement that the bomb was real and the bomb, if it went off, would kill us all. And it did, I would have to say, colour your view of the world. And every so often, I can remember the BBC or somebody made a film in the documentary style of what would happen in the case of a nuclear attack on a city like Sheffield or somewhere, which I accidentally, I imagine, got to see. I had nightmares about it for months and months after. There was a field at the back of the hospital where we used to keep cows, and for some reason, in my dreams, it was always there that these ballistic missiles would arrive. I don't know why.
Did you just, was your dream just like a cow looking up and going, as a nuke just came down in the background?
Pretty much. Now,
so here's a question, Michael. During that time, did adults look at you, realize you were terrified, and tell you that that was the right thing?
My mother did not say, you know what, Michael, there's a very good chance that we will all be obliterated by nuclear holocaust within the next 15 years. No, she didn't. All of the adults made a fairly large attempt to say, that it will be okay. Don't worry about it. It won't happen. Nobody would do that. Everybody is working very hard to stop that happening. So you just don't worry about that.
I mean, every time I hear these reports that children are just terrified of climate change, that there's this terrible anxiety, all I can think is sort of, well, maybe their parents should do their fucking job.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that's difficult. But it's sort of your job to not feed into children's delusional fears that they're all going to die horrifically in Greta 10 years.
Greta Thunberg says explicitly, I want you to be panic.
Now, I will say, as someone who has a great interest in history, there are a few times I can think of in human history where a child coming along, catching the popular mood, becoming a demagogic figure, and telling people that rational thought has reached the end of its usefulness has ever ended well for anyone.
No. The moment where the...
I mean, have you seen people who actually panic, Michael? What people do when they panic?
Well, I can tell you I know people who have suffered from what we call panic attacks. I have had a claustrophobic moment once many years ago that I had, where I panicked in it. And it is horrible. As a kid, I used to have asthma. A panic attack in some ways will mimic the, and one of the things that happens in both panic and asthma is you can't breathe. And it is absolutely terrifying, Gary. And especially for a child, you cannot breathe. It is a horrible, and this is being touted as something to get your children to do.
So do you think if Richard Bruton had appeared while you were suffocating, when, you know, you're absolutely right, that's a powerful statement, you are gonna die.
Your bronchitis have the right idea.
Now, do you have any solid ideas of how we can adopt a technological framework that recognises the importance of indigenous technologies and innovations in addressing climate change and enables developing countries and communities to develop, access and transfer environmentally sound, socially acceptable, gender responsive and equitable climate technologies as the people's demands for the global strike site, as you slowly suffocate? And I love seeing politicians have to come out and say this is so strong and powerful. One, because they don't fucking believe it for a second, because politicians are generally smart enough to know children are fucking idiots. And two, because it's just wonderful to see. Like, really, these children are better at your job than you are.
Which is the implication, and know more about it, and care more about it than you do.
Like, I don't debate people on climate change, regardless of their stance, for the very simple reason that I'm not an expert on it. And the general public, despite the fact they have very strong views, are damn well not experts on it. And those are adults. If you want to point to a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old and go, they know what they're talking about, they don't. They have no idea. I would love to see RTE just go up, take a random selection of people, not edited at all, and just ask them basic questions about the environment and greenhouse gas levels. But then people complain and say, well, they don't need to offer solutions. They don't need to know exactly what's happening. They just need to be able to say something needs to change. And you sort of go, well, if you don't know what's happening and you've got no solutions, well, then you don't know that anything needs to change because you've no fucking idea what you're talking about.
You certainly are not in a position to roll out the kind of programme which the people's demands would represent.
I will say, I absolutely hope we implement all of this. Because then it won't be climate change that kills these people, it'll be poverty. And as they sink into the poverty that their own demands will have caused, I will be old enough that I'll have a large amount of disposable wealth, and I will laugh as they eat their young for sustenance.
And on that cheerful note...
Oh yes, eco-anxiety.
We'll just finish... Yes, eco-anxiety. I think that's instilled quite a bit of anxiety around people listening, perhaps regarding you and their children, and particularly...
Well, I'm not going to eat their children. They're going to eat their children.
I don't know.
Or more exactly, their children are going to eat their grandchildren.
I have a picture now in my mind of you sitting in a big chair, gnawing on a leg of a turkey or something in the manner of Henry VIII, and having people eat their children in front of you for entertainment. And in return, you give them a basket of goodies. There has been
I mean, it worked for Cronus.
Yeah, it did really well, didn't it? Until,
I mean, for a while.
Until it didn't work anymore. There has been, Gary, an opinion poll. It's behaviour and attitudes.
I'm going to say I don't think this poll is accurate, and I'm going to open
now,
with that.
I've been struggling with this. There's a phrase that people, you'll be well aware of, use, which is an outlier, a rogue poll. I don't believe in the existence of rogue polls, because I think the rogue polls are always polls that people don't want to believe in for various reasons. Polls will always tell you something. However, having said that, this poll has Sinn Féin up 6 points to 20%. Labour down 2 to 3. Fine Gael is unchanged at 26. Fianna Fáil is down to 29. And that feels about right. Fianna Fáil 4 or 5 points ahead of Fine Gael. But Sinn Féin up 6 points makes me wonder if the sampling error happened somewhere along the line here.
Yeah, I mean, Sinn Féin up 6 points after all of their trends downward, and after nothing has happened involving Sinn Féin.
Well, nothing good. I mean, if you wanted to say well, anything happening, I think increased irritation amongst a lot of people regarding the way they're managing the absence of Stormont in the north and the abstentionism and how that's affecting Brexit in the north. I think if there's any news for Sinn Féin, it's bad news, or has been bad news. Also, we have seen the rise of not continuity, or this time the what was it called? There's a return anyway. It seems to be a more explicit return to some kind of organised terrorist violence. Now, that's not anything to do with Sinn Féin. But because of Sinn Féin's history and because of the connections, it tends to end up being wrapped up in that story. I don't see there's any good news. Certainly 6 points worth of good news.
Yeah, 6 points where the downward trend is not seen in Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
No.
I mean, Fianna Fáil is down one, but that's from 30 to 29, so...
Yeah.
But then for Sinn Féin to go up six... And if this is correct, they're taking it from the Green Party and Labour.
Yeah, no.
And I just don't...
Maybe it's a progressive thing. Maybe the progressives like the fact that they're supporting the use of the power for Westminster to directly impose gay marriage and... more wider abortion in the north.
You want to talk about taking shit from people? You should have seen some of the messages I got about that Sinn Féin piece I wrote.
Really?
Oh, they did not like the last line, and I can see why they didn't like the last line.
What was the last line?
The last line. So I was talking about it was theoretically about an SNP candidate being removed from the lists for voting against.
Yes.
That abortion vote, and Sinn Féin support that vote, and I was saying that. Sinn Féin, by supporting that vote, are supporting the imposition of British rule upon Ireland because it's politically expedient. And whatever one thinks about their other positions, if you say you are the Republican Party and you are in favour of total Irish independence, you don't get to turn around and go, actually, that's a great one because we like it. So the end of the article, I made that point, and then the article ended with... perhaps all this time Sinn Féin were saying they wish to see a united Ireland. They meant united under the British crown. It's merely taken them this long to find a British monarch willing to give them a sufficient amount of scraps from the table.
I could see that that would have been very popular.
They didn't take that well.
I am shocked, Gary, shocked, I tell you, to discover gambling going on. In this establishment.
I will say, most of the guys I met in person who had seen it, the kind of older rural IRA guys Sinn Féin guys.
Yes, that's right.
That's an important clarification there. I really would have changed that story. Basically, when they said something, I would just go, well, it's true though, isn't it? And there would be a sort of, no.
But
this conversation is over.
Anyway, I was hoping to be able to say something to them, release the people back into the beautiful sunny uplands of their Sunday. However, I don't know what it's like with you there. We have had the most torrential downpouring of rain in the last 18 hours or so. So I would say to the people out there, enjoy your damp Sunday, if it is so.
And I will close out by saying that regardless of how good your Sunday or how badly you think your Sunday is going, I would just like to inform you that Simon Coveney's letter to the Irish Cabinet warning them to stop leaking news about Brexit has in fact itself been leaked.
And on that note, I'd say goodbye. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
All the best.